probably won't trust you. If you want to go to war, the guns, my pleasure. Even Jesus had 12 disciples on the lever, trigger, whatever. He don't want now they get 3,000. I'm like jury duty, you're new to this part of town. Your white tee, well to me, look like a nightgown. Make your mama proud, take that thing two sizes down. Then you look like... I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is Your Damn Right. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate it. This is our weekly pod where we talk about what we consider to be the most conversation-worthy things on television, whether they be the most popular or the most thought-provoking or entertaining. We appreciate you for listening. Please comment, like, subscribe, or share, especially comment. You know, I would still like to know what shows do you guys watch? What are you listening for? That could drive content if we could get some feedback on that. We appreciate you being here. We're going to start with How to Get Away with Murder. Hi, I'm Philip. Is how yeah. We began. What'd you think, Ash?
I thought it was really good. There's definitely a lot of build up and a lot of twists, as usual, considering the show. So I thought it was good. You know, it started off with Bonnie, and she's having a breakdown and everything. And you see the juxtapose of, you know, Annalise, you know, what, you know, her losing this relationship with Bonnie is, you know, hurting her as well. But I have to say, I like the fact that we got Laurel. This, you know, she's not.
Wow, are you liking Laurel now?
I have to say, I'm enjoying Laurel. Maybe because that she wasn't, her story this episode wasn't necessarily about, you know, her and Frank.
Right.
You know,
although I do like her. The more we see of them, like, the more I like that relationship.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that, you know, a little bit more as well. But I'm glad we got something more than just, you know, her relationship with Frank. We understand, you know, we get a better understanding of, you know, last week with her and Annalise, and why Annalise is choosing her as her new Bonnie. And
oh, okay,
stuff like
okay.
That.
Let's talk about that. I like Laurel more than most, and I've always liked the character. I know that you and Jaleesa last week, as our guest said, both of you guys didn't really care for Laurel in the past. I've always liked Laurel. I think giving her the role of new Bonnie is insane. She's a first year law student. Hey, Annalise, how about spending some of that money and, like, hiring a professional? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but I guess what Annalise is doing is, I guess, in a sense, you know, quote-unquote, keeping it in the family. But I understand why she chose Laurel, because...
What they're doing is avoiding reintroducing a new character. there is no like logical storyline reason why she just promotes Laurel.
Well, Laurel knows how to keep her head together, and that's, you know, clearly Bonnie doesn't. Laurel knows how to keep her head together, and she knows how to. I won't necessarily say get shit done, but. She doesn't buckle under the pressure.
I'm cool with giving Laurel more responsibility. I just don't understand why, like, on the surface, Annalise is entrusting so much responsibility to first-year law students. Like, it's an inherent, like, thing with the series. Like, okay, they're all, like, interning for her, but she has, like, one professional on staff, and when that professional, like, takes off, like, don't you need some more help? I mean,
it's just a temporary gig.
Right.
Annalise is not expecting Laurel to take on this position for, you know, a super long time. So she's expecting Bonnie to eventually come back. So... You know, she had to make the decision.
It wouldn't kill her to get, like, a second professional lawyer on staff. It would be the worst thing that happened. Carla Souza, I don't know if there's been reference to it in the past. I wasn't aware that that was, like, a Mexican-American actress until the talk between her and Frank in this episode, and I, like, looked it up. She is apparently... she is Mexican-American, and she has in the past played in lots of Spanish-speaking television roles. Yeah.
Well, I know she was because it was a scene with her and her family last season. I think it was the mid-season premiere when they were showing when everybody was doing like over the break or stuff like that, and they showed her, you know, dinner with her family, and it seemed like a tense moment with her and
yeah,
her dad.
Yeah, very well might have explored that more than I remember. Like, I don't, I basically binged the first season, so like some of the details are not all there.
And they were speaking Spanish at the dinner table. I don't know if this is just something I made up in my head, but I kind of always assumed that Laurel's family may have some criminal background of some sort.
That's racist, Ash. That's just hardcore racist. I heard them speaking Spanish, and I just knew they were criminals.
No, it was before, like, I thought of that, like, oh, like, her family's Mexican. Or, you know, it was just something about her. And I don't know. It was just something that just popped in my head that, like, they have some underground, maybe criminal behavior or some shit. Like, I don't know.
I don't
so,
either.
It could be why she's so comfortable. Well, not necessarily comfortable, but she doesn't lose her head as quickly as everyone else does.
I don't know. I just think she's a much more logical, rational human being. Like, Michaela is a fucking basket case. So is Connor. Asher is a dweeb. Wes is a psychopath. Like, she's like the only, like, logical, rational being among them. How much do you believe the episode... Well, hold on. Before we get to that. You mentioned where we picked up off, and really where we picked up was right where we left off. And I just think it's interesting because we've had some like 2-part and 3-part supposedly episodes in this television year with like American Horror Story and Scream Queens specifically, I think of, and it didn't feel like 2-part episode. It just felt like a continuation of the serialized story. This actually somehow felt like a 2-part episode because we started right where we left. Back not too long ago, 10, 15 years ago, 2-part episodes were a thing. Like, because I was just thinking, like, the way that television has become so serialized, and I'm in favor of that, but you don't really see anything that feels like 2-part episodes that much anymore, because most shows do pick up where they leave off every week. So it's, and then you have like a series like How to Get Away with Murder. And I think why this felt like a 2-part episode is because we usually have like this case of the week and we just like abandon it this week. Now, like the twins were like, or not the twins, but like the brother and sister were like shoehorned in here into that slot. But I don't know. I thought it felt different. So how much do you think the episode benefited? I'm not even going to ask if it did. I know it did. How much did the episode benefit from not having like a random case of the week thrown in?
I think it benefited a lot. Absolutely. The case of the week doesn't bother me, but I just wish it wasn't as much, you know, because, you know, them having a case of the week or whatever, it shows that, you know, these characters, you know, they stay busy. You know what I mean? Lori, like Annalise, she's going to have, like, cases, you know, left and right. But I wish, you know, there was one, you know, forefront case like they usually do. They did it last season, then they have many cases around it, but I wish, you know, they were more spread out, I guess.
I thought this episode made the case, excuse me for the pun, that this really should be like ideally, like, I understand network conflicts, like the network wants content, and even Viola Davis, like, didn't want to do a full season, so she negotiated down to 15 or 16 episodes a season. But I think ideally this would be a 10-episode season with, like, no cases of the week. Like, I think if this was, like, if How to Get Away with Murder was 10 episodes a season, like, I mean, it's already a good series. That's why we talk about it every week. It's entertaining as hell. But, I think it would be in a much more serious discussion about how good it is. It would just be like a nonstop thrill ride, and we wouldn't have to take detours into like random sex land and girl murders her murders her friendsville.
Yeah, I kind of like that case.
I mean, it's fine because it's just a different show. Like, it's a different show when it does that. I don't, What'd you think about the big reveal of Catherine and Philip's possible relationship that was?
I didn't see that coming. I'm sure no one saw that coming. But it was It was a crazy reveal. First of all, I just want to say, it's still kind of still up in the air if he's at the actual, you know,
murderer?
Possible, you know, birth child of
Who?
The two. So, and I don't think Annalise actually did any background check to confirm it. At least she didn't say anything about it. So I'm like, I don't know.
No.
She just was like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever. I believe his story. Or like, you know, just keep an eye on him, mate, or whatever. You know, something like that. And just whatever. But so,
well, they
possible?
Had some sort of background check because they identified him in the adoption agency. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember the specifics of exactly how they identified him. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have one episode left, and you know, before we have a big break, which we will be sad about. But since the reveal is coming next episode, who do you think shot Annalise Keating?
I have no idea.
Give me a guess. You gotta pick somebody.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just gonna go with. I'm gonna pull somebody random because Eve.
Who'd you say?
Eve. Annalise's her little girlfriend in New York or whatever.
Damn, that is random. Yeah.
Maybe she found out about Nate and she's like, "Fuck it, I can't take it anymore."
I'm gonna go with Frank.
Frank. Yeah, that's actually a good guess.
Here's why I'm guessing Frank. Obviously, it's just complete guess. Okay, well, he drops Annalise off, and he's, like, all shook up looking when he's leaving the hospital, and he gets past those cameras, and, like, he's all good. And he didn't like departing with his money in this episode. I'm starting to feel like, obviously, he's fed up with Annalise. And I think the biggest thing to me is he seems to be somehow in cahoots with Catherine. And I'm not sure that Annalise would be at this point. Like, and he, if you remember, like, I don't remember his last episodes or a couple episodes ago, like, they fake Catherine's death and then he takes her out in, like, the middle of nowhere and she wakes up again. I don't know. There's a lot going on with Frank and he's my best guess right now, but it could be literally anybody. So it could be Eve.
I'm still thinking of the idea that Annalise has probably set all this up or something. I don't know.
You know, it could be a dream season, and Annalise will wake up.
Let's see that. It did seem like she was possibly arguing with somebody before the gun went off, so who knows?
Well, that could still be anybody.
It could be Catherine.
Could be. I mean, it could be anybody. Could be Bonnie.
I don't know. Bonnie's too obvious of a... It's way too obvious to be Bonnie at this point.
Is Bonnie obvious?
Yes, Bonnie is going down.
I mean, I know that Bonnie's a suspect along with Connor and Frank and Wes and Nate. I don't know that Bonnie's any more likely than the others.
Bonnie, at this point, would be the very obvious choice. Bonnie and Wes. Those would be the two obvious
What about Nate? Nate's the one she screwed up the most. Poor Nate.
I don't think Nate was... I don't know, because in one of the flashbacks, the students are leaving, and that's when Nate pulls up. Because he was calling...
Yeah, but I mean, he could have orchestrated... He might not have actually pulled the trigger, but he could have orchestrated it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be... I think everybody's in on it. Everyone's a suspect, so everyone's in on it.
So one thing I think we should talk about is Jefferson White, who played Philip. That dude was a really interesting actor to me. Like, the cadence of his voice and, like, he has, like, a little tick in his expressions. He's really unusual, and I like him. I've seen him in Manhattan and The Americans before, and, like, he's a really valuable, like, underrated character actor. He just, like, shows up, and... I thought the scene with him and the gang was really good because he was so cool and calm.
He was so calm. It was weird, but I like that scene because he was definitely very calm.
It was unnerving almost because it made Annalise feel threatened in a way we don't really see Annalise feel threatened a lot.
Yeah.
One thing, and if you really think about it, like, Annalise uses people's emotions against them a lot, and this guy is just, like, sitting there emotionless. Like, So she doesn't have that tool. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was smart, though, because, like, even though everything ostensibly was saying, oh, he's not dangerous, like the fact that he was making Annalise feel threatened and he was so like unnerving still kind of told the audience, oh, something's not
Yeah,
right with
something
this
was
guy.
off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, one more thing I needed to say is poor Michaela. Like, she likes a guy, so she leads off, like, her I like you speech with, okay, I know you're probably gay.
He's probably gay. So I mean, I was like, oh, poor thing. She's
I don't know
gay.
what I would say to me if a girl was like, okay, I know you're probably gay. I was like, wait, what?
Like, that's not something you really lead off with. I'm like, wait,
Yeah.
what?
Probably says more about you than the other person.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that I didn't get to or we didn't talk about from How to Get Away with Murder?
No, but I will say it again that I did really like Laurel this episode. And I like how Annalise pointed out that Laurel could be the most like her. And I found that very interesting. So I'm looking for more to Laurel. I'm Selena. I never disliked the character. I just wish they focused her character on more than just Frank.
I'm almost positive, like 3 weeks ago, you said you disliked the character. But I mean,
I didn't
I
get
don't.
like
I'm not going back through the tapes. I mean.
oh gosh. I don't dislike Laurel. I just she was my least favorite, and I think it's because of the story that they was giving, and they won't give her much except unless it had to do with Frank. And I was like, okay, we can give her more. They gave Asher more than they gave her, and I was like, come on, really?
Okay. All right, well, next week we will be back with the identity of Annalise's killer. So, join us in. Next up, we're going to talk about Scream Queens and American Horror Story. Stay with us. The official song of Kappa House. Don't go chasing waterfalls. I remember that fondly from when I was a child. Ash, how do you remember Mommy Dearest from Tuesday night?
I'm just glad Denise is back.
What the fuck is going
Glad
on
Denise
with
is
Denise?
I don't know what's going on. The whole wardrobe change cracked me up. She was like, what was it, Chanel No. 5? I was like, why are you wearing my stuff? He's like, the question is why you could say I wear the same size as a 47-year-old woman. I was
Denise
dying.
Hempfield is a Kappa now? Like, that might be the most insane thing that has happened on this series about insane shit. And I think it's, like, notably superspicious behavior. I don't think we can rule her out as the Red Devil killer
Yeah,
now.
definitely not yet.
Like, Denise Hempfield is fucking insane. We have established that. She's trying to, like, perpetrate some old school fantasy.
She's like Zayday like pointed out that she's still attached to, Cap because, the fact that she was discriminated against for not being loud in it because she was black anyways. So now she has a way in with living this fantasy as well as trying to get rid of the other black girl that's in
Yeah.
the house.
It was the little things that I really liked about this episode. Like, especially there's this scene between Denise and Chanel Number 3 when Chanel hired her. And, like, there's so many things in that scene I love. Like, first of all, there are little charms on Chanel 3's headphones that they would, like, jingle like chimes when she turned her head from side
Yeah, I know. I noticed that too. I was like, oh gosh, I know John's gonna love those those earbuds.
Yeah, I did. I really did. And I love the super specific, like, sandals fantasies that Denise has been having. And her dedication to that dream job as a security guard.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh my God.
I've
That's
never
like those.
seen anyone so dedicated to that job.
Yeah, and she can't even do it right, so
Yeah,
that's what
she's
kills me.
terrible at it.
Yeah,
She
terrible
was gonna get
security.
paid like an insane amount of money to investigate a murder and she just
Oh
stopped
yeah.
investigating.
She said 1 million. Like that's the highest number you can think of. Really? Okay, 3 million. It's like, what the fuck?
So I don't know who's the worst negotiator in that scene. Like Chanel
Yeah.
3 is basically giving money away, but Denise is leaving so much on the table. I don't know. I wrote down in my notes, how is the Kendall vlogger still alive? And then like right after that, they finally kill her.
She died.
It's like, how has she not died yet? I thought that was like her only point.
The thing about her, like, I thought that was kind of rude. The way they had, like, the Red Dead was so disrespectful. Like, really, you're gonna post her up like that with like giant candles, like just
Okay,
gonna
you
throw
gotta
them.
start with this disrespect stuff. He murdered her. Like, after you. That is the ultimate disrespect. After you murder someone, like, I don't think it. I mean, it doesn't really much matter what you do. You've disrespected them to to like, infinity. It doesn't. You can't go further. You can just.
Yes, you can. Like, come on. At least you could have just left the body there. No, you're just gonna pose the body up with like candles like lit everywhere. It's just like, no, that's
And
rude.
then for like her funeral or wake or whatever, they had a bunch of candles again. Like this girl's
Yeah.
only identity is like she really liked candles.
Oh, man.
No matter how many times it happens, I still love Chanel or Emma Roberts and Chanel sitting people down and explaining how stupid rich she is.
Oh, God. That's like sick. Her and Chad, though, the compliment
The
thing.
compliment night, yeah. Chad's got to work on that. He's not. Chad's not very good at compliment night. Jesus Christ, Chanel One can deliver some news. Like I don't know what Denise is mad about.
Oh,
The
my God.
next time I get bad news, like I want it all. Not only do I want Emma Roberts speaking at my funeral, I want her to fire me for my next job or something. Like that was amazing.
That was so mean. Like, I don't even really care about the character Grace or
No, not
whatever
at
she
all.
is, but it was so, like, that was so
Have I
foul.
mentioned how I like Mean Girls? Because I'm kind of in love with Chanel right now. I mean,
Yes, I know.
Chanel's the best.
But I was like,
Best.
Grace, like, beat her ass. Like,
Beat
what the
her
hell?
ass? What? That was
Yes!
amazing.
No, if someone says some shit like that to me, you're getting your ass kicked. I don't care if it's true or not. It was just so fucked up. It was funny. Well, it was kind of funny, but it was, I would have whooped her.
Pretty funny, yeah. About Grace. Okay, so the old hag lady sits her father down, and she's like, "Do you know what Grace's GPA is?" And I'm over here like, "She's in her first semester. She doesn't have a GPA. The fuck is this about?"
I know. I was like, okay, but
She
this
has
whole
no
thing
grade. She has not completed a class. School is canceled. Like, what are you talking about?
but that's really the point. I was like, okay, I'm gonna need these people to actually pay, like, work on their grades. Like, Gracie is not doing anything in school,
Well, I
like
mean,
at all.
school has been shut down, so they're probably gonna give some candidates. Like, I think there's that rule in colleges that you get like academic forgiveness if your roommate kills himself. Like, what if like all your roommates get murdered? I'm pretty sure they'll like let you off the hook for a semester.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. I don't know if we're any closer to learning anything other than what's it? Boone's been working out a lot, so that's good.
Yeah.
Good for Boone.
They thought it was Joaquin Phoenix. I was like, he looks nothing like him. I'm like, no, that's not like, and then he spelled the name wrong though. I was like, Jesus.
Anything else on Scream Queens? Like, I mean, we've talked about it before. To some extent, it's like a vapid show. I enjoy it, and it's comedic. I don't
Yeah.
really feel like there's a lot to delve. The more we delve into it, like the more annoyed I'll probably end up getting.
Yeah. I did like the scene with Denise and Chanel.
Do you like what has happened to Denise?
I don't know what's happening to Denise. It was like she was the comic. She was the comic relief, but she was also the audience. And I guess she's still playing that role, but I guess they're trying to give her more to do. But I did find the scene funny, the fact that she was like she's threatening Chanel by saying she's gonna sleep with Chad again. My thing is, it's like Chanel, why don't you just dump
I
Chad, okay?
know. That's like the
It's like this.
poor. I mean, that's the one thing that frustrates me with Chanel. That's why Chanel's not quite the greatest. She's no Regina George. Like, Regina George would
Yeah.
be fucking done with Chad.
Yeah. Yeah. Regina
Chanel's
George
got
would
that
fit.
weakness. And I mean, you know, after she caught Chad with the goat, it really should have been over. I don't. By the way, we talked about goats a little last week. I know there was the goat on The Walking Dead. We had the goat on Scream Queens, and as we'll talk about later, we had a goat on prominently featured in The Leftovers. Like, goats are
Oh
taking over primetime television. It's a thing.
It really is. Like, okay. This is everywhere.
So you want to jump to room 33?
Yeah.
All right. This was sort of an interesting episode. I know we touched on this last week, but last week was a little more focused, so it was less applicable. I thought this episode was a good example of the fact that, like, there's fundamentally just too much going on. There's the murder plot, and then there's the progression of Kathy Bates' character, and there's Liz Taylor's relationship with Gaga, or the Countess, and there's the serial killer storyline, and the vampire lore that we keep getting so established, and the secret love affair with Liz and the model whose name I don't remember,
It's called
Tristan.
Rufio.
And keep in mind, this is a limited series, so like many of
Yeah.
these things, and they don't even feel congruent. Like, there are only so many episodes. It's not like we're gonna have seasons to explore this. We have like 10 episodes, and it's like, all right, we have to resolve all these storylines, and we didn't even get back to like the children who are murdering Los Angeles.
That's why it'll come up in the finale or some shit.
Oh, yeah. I know that baby had, like, with the vagina face was creepy as hell. Yeah, it's like a vagina with teeth. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen, saw, like, the dark comedy Teeth, but that's what that baby
Oh
was.
gosh,
Yeah.
I did. I've seen
That's what that baby looked like. I'm sorry. Not
that
sorry.
movie. And I'm assuming that's on, Scream Queen Chanel is referring to what is it, Chanel number 5?
Oh, yeah, she has teeth in her mouth.
He has a vagina with teeth.
Yeah.
Every time you say that, like I think of that movie.
But yeah, I just feel like some of these things have to be cut out, and you know, then we could feel more weight behind them, because it's really hard. Here's what I mean by incongruent. So I said a lot of these storylines feel incongruent. There isn't room in a single episode to both explore like this dark nature of quote true love and like the obsessive dangerous sense, and to tell
Yeah.
random horror stories from different points in American history all throughout it. Like, if you're going to have like this hour-long exploration of like the depths of human love and how dark and complicated it
Yeah.
is, do that. Don't tell me stories about the German murderers and like the baby and like the baby vampire and stick to the fucking story. The
Yeah, I don't.
theme. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the thing is, like, 'cause they've been hinting about, Room 33 for, like, since the beginning, first episode. But the thing is, it's like, no, it's the thing about the show, the season, especially the season, it's like there's nobody I care about except for Liz Taylor, and they definitely made me care, made everybody care about that character from the last episode. But to get that gut punch in this episode, which, by the way, Liz Taylor and Tristan, that was it came out of nowhere.
Nowhere, right? Like,
Like, I don't care.
yeah, well, I wrote down, wouldn't it have been more affecting if we had, like, seen it, like, before now?
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean,
Like, hints of it at least.
yeah,
It
I
was just
mean, at
nothing.
least we're, like, when we finally saw it, we were like, oh, but I mean, I think we should have spent time with them for the last few
Yeah.
episodes, and that way, like, when this happened, where it was like when the Countess killed him, it would have mattered to us, maybe, as opposed to, like,
Yeah.
oh, sucks for Liz.
Yeah, it was like that's the only thing reason why people was like, oh no, don't kill him because we cared about Liz, but that's it. We didn't
I mean,
care. We just wanted.
honestly, like, Liz can probably, I know he's a good looking guy or whatever, but I mean, he's kind of a obnoxious, like, dick. I don't feel that bad. I mean, out of all the people the Countess has killed, he's probably not the best one. Speaking of people who died, I wrote in my notes, Mr. Wu is a fucking idiot. Do you remember Mr. Wu? Like,
Definitely.
you're having like this random hookup with a hot blonde, and another hot blonde wants to join you, and you're like, wait, no, this is too good. I have to leave. wrong with you,
Well,
man?
he thought it was a scam. He thought it was a scam.
Oh, what scam? How? Like, they're are they? What are they? One of them's gonna steal your wallet? What do you? What?
Yeah, you'd be surprised when that shit like that happens.
I mean,
but he thought they were gonna charge him afterwards.
I wish we had more of those German girls though, because I feel like their transformation into murderers could have actually been a compelling storyline and study of like how the severe impact of a setting could have on otherwise like normal people. But instead, like we saw them in the first episode, and now they're
And that's it.
back, and now they're killing people. And we.
Yeah, they should have had them like throughout the season. Like even if it was just like one scene. An episode and up to this point, then yeah, but we just saw him in the first episode and that's it. It's like,
but I mean, things can't stay focused because we go off on weird tangents with like children murdering schools full of people and like Lady Gaga dancing in disco clubs. Like, we go off on these weird, like, Ryan Murphy just goes off in his own little fantasy land and he forgot that, like, oh yeah, I had a story over here and like people were interested in it, but I just went off doing my own thing.
I'll never get over the Gaga and the disco thing.
It's nothing to do with anything else. We just spent like 3 minutes in a disco club. Yeah, I don't know. I think in a season, I guess what we were supposed to take away from this episode was that, like, in a season that's a lot about excess, like, love is the most dangerous thing to have too much of, and that caring too deeply about someone can be devastating.
Affection and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like what we were supposed to take away. I don't know if that's what we got. I ended up taking away, like, okay, John Lowe, definitely a mass murderer. Like, that's coming up. Where are the fucking kids? And what is going... Why are there, like, 15 storylines happening on one episode? Why? At least if they're going to do that and they're not going to necessarily all tie in sometimes, they can at least do it like Game of Thrones, or like, here's what these people are doing, here's what these people are doing, and here's what these people are, instead of just like, wait, the German girls are back, wait, what?
Like, you forgot about them. It's
yeah,
like,
I thought
oh,
they
yeah.
were dead. Like, I didn't think they were coming back.
That's it. Yeah, I just thought they were dead and, you know, okay, they're not coming back, so... Big deal.
All the negative I've said, the bloody orgy threesome scene was pretty interesting. Like, at least visually. Like, that was... I don't know if I've seen anything on TV quite like that.
Yeah, that was the big backlight. What I took away from this episode was that little girl has some shitty-ass parents. That's all I took away from this episode. That little girl's parents are just terrible.
Yeah, I think that goes without saying. Like, one of them is dead, a vampire, and the other is probably a serial killer. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going out on a limb there. She has some shitty parents.
Like, the amount of therapy this little girl's going to have to go through for the rest of her life. Like, it's just terrible parents.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically both of her parents are murderers now, so, I mean, honestly, she might end up with, like, Chanel 3's problem of, like, all the Charlie Manson charisma, so, I mean, just be careful. I don't know, personally, I think I might have liked Scream Queens a little more than AHS this week. I mean, AHS was, it was what it was. I think the most interesting thing that might happen this season, or at least still to come, might be if we ever finally, and I think the preview might have hinted at it, when we finally get, like, the scenes of the Countess and March together. That'll be at least...
Yeah, that's what I've been waiting on. I'm glad we're finally going to get it next week. So, yeah, that should be interesting next week, because, you know, I've been waiting for that. I've been wanting them two to meet. It's like, these two people have been in this hotel for, like, how long? And, like,
80, 90 years? Yeah.
Yeah, like, we haven't seen them cross paths yet, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
All right, so, come back next week. We will talk more Scream Queens and American Horror Story. Next up, we're going to talk Empire. Stick with us.
So, on this episode of Empire, we have a lot of shit that doesn't make sense.
Okay, what is some of the shit that doesn't make sense, Ash?
Well, for one, I just want to bring up the fact that that random ass, somewhat kind of sort of threesome that was happening, well, about to happen. I honestly thought I dreamt that up. I really did. Because I was watching the show, I looked down for like 2 seconds and looked back. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I really thought like I made it up in my head or something. But it honestly didn't. That whole scene was so fucking random.
I would say one of maybe Marissa Tomei is maybe giving the most interesting performance on the show right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I give her that.
Because I don't know what's going on with that character, but I do find her interesting. And she hasn't been, like, ruined by some of the super soapy elements that have annoyed me about other characters the past few episodes. So, like, when Lucius was on that call, like, I just really want to know, like, what the story is with the person on the other end of that call and, like, why she's having threesomes with Lucius.
I was like, wait, isn't she a lesbian? But okay. I was interested in that phone. I was trying to figure out, like, why Lucius is, I'm assuming he's clearly drunk. And he got Mimi's back. I get that. But first of all, I don't think you know Mimi for that long. To just be grabbing her phone, to be cussing out her wife or girlfriend or what the fuck ever. But
who was clearly not the other girl in the threesome.
Yeah, clearly not her. I did like the shot. I'm liking the dynamics between Lucius and Mimi. It's an interesting dynamic, and they might be a powerful duo. You know, they've proven that they are. You know, they can get shit done.
I think they're going to be better than Cookie and her lover. That's...
Oh, gosh. That's going to be a disaster. Oh, like 3 days? Y'all been in bed for 3 days? You don't know, you didn't feel or see that damn thing on his back?
Does she know to look for that? Like, I don't remember. Did Hakeem describe it?
He should have,
but I don't know that he. I don't remember if he did.
I don't know if he had, but even then, I probably would have at least asked, like, "Hey, what the fuck is that? Like, what's that for? Like, what's that about? You know, I would have been curious about it or something. Like, ask the question. But three days, like, do y'all not have? She got a job.
I'm gonna defend Cookie here, though. I'm gonna defend her for a second because she had never like gotten laid from anybody except Lucius. And maybe Lucius isn't even any good in bed. So, like, this is probably, like, the best sex she's ever had. So, like, I can understand her staying in bed for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She still got a job. Like, you try to get...
Oh, hey, Hakeem is a partner, and you should start treating him like one. He is ready to run a multi-million-dollar company. That guy just screams ready to be a CEO to me.
My thing is, like, he did have a point. It's like, Cookie, you're going to make a deal with these guys because your new boo thing says so. But these are the same people who kidnapped your son. You should at least talk to Hakeem about it first instead of just doing that. Right. You know, I mean, I would have cussed my mom out. Like, really?
You know who I really? Missed this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Anika. Where is Anika?
Yes. Like, I mean, she hasn't really been in
the... I don't know. Like, the last thing we saw was just her being, like, sad and pathetic. Where is she?
And I keep closing the door on her ass. Yeah. I was like, oh, poor thing. I wish they'd give more to Anika. Like, I want to know... I mean, I'm sure she's going to come back in the finale with probably some crazy shit, but I want more build-up with her. Like, we just, like... Before last episode, last we saw, you know, Cookie pretty much was like, you know, I can't trust you. And that was a few episodes before that, or like an episode or two before that. But it's, I don't know. I don't know where they're going with that character.
Let me ask you a question. Last season, the main storyline was the King Lear plot line for Shakespeare, where one of the children will inherit the father's kingdom. And he had ALS. By the way, I heard this week, and from a reliable source, I believe it, that the reason the show was structured that way in season one was because they didn't trust Terrence Howard, and like they weren't sure that, so they gave themselves an out that they could write him off the show if he was like being insane. So there's that. But anyway, like, has there been an original storyline since then that has lived up to that one in season one? Because, like, what is the high point of this season? Was it like Lucius in prison? What was it?
That's probably what it was. Lucius in prison. That was probably like the big story of the season so far. So I don't know where they're going. You know, what direction they're trying to take this show. At this point, you know, it's like two companies battling for each other. You got to, you know.
Yeah, but we sort of strayed away from that. Like, we haven't really focused on that in a couple of episodes.
Yeah, especially with, you know, Jamal, you know, coming back, you know, to Cookie.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed those scenes, you know, Jamal and Cookie. Because it made me feel like, it felt like season one again, you know. Like,
yeah.
Even just the look on his face, you know, the joy that, you know. Adorable Jamal working with his mom again, you know, so I enjoyed those scenes.
Let me tell you what I think is a problem for Empire right now. So you hear people say stuff like this all the time. Like, the band's first album, like, they had their entire lives to write it, and they have to write their next one in, like, a year. Empire, this is its second season in less than a year. After it blew the fuck up on Fox and put out, like, incredible ratings that, like, turn the industry on its head, Fox, like, express ordered another season in September instead of putting it out again in January. Like, last year, they didn't even give them a full year. And they're supposed to produce, like, a full series in a few months. And I just feel like some of the aimlessness of this season right now, where we're both going, like, what's going on? Like, where are we going? I don't really feel like they know where they're going all the time. It might be the result of just, like, a rush job where the writers just did not have enough time to plan out and map out the season.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. With Fox rushing on it, my thing is, if they waited till spring, the show, and, you know, give the writers more time, I think, you know, I don't think the show would have fallen.
No, I don't either.
Fans, like, because, you know, it was the hottest show, you know, of the season, you know, that season.
And I don't know that they were worried about the show falling as much as they were like, we got to get that money. We got to get these ratings. Yeah. Let's get it back. Let's put it back on the air.
Yeah. But my thing is, if they waited, they still could have had the ratings because, you know, like I said, it was the biggest show and people loved it. So people would have waited. Even they would have been, you know, mad about it. You know, we got to wait, you know, another year. But, you know, they would have came back. You know, they would have right in front of that TV, you know, counting down until they came back.
And I'm going to compare it or contrast it, rather, to a few of the other series we talk about that are well done. How to Get Away with Murder is done once a year. We had a year off, and it is run by, I mean, is a team that has been together for years, and they've basically got this whole, like, suspense thing down to a science at this point. We're going to do this, and we're going to shock the people here. And The Leftovers took over a year in between seasons. Fargo took over a year between seasons. Like, they both took, like, 18 months between seasons, as opposed to Empire took, like, 4 months. So, I really think that might matter. So, one other thing I want to mention is Andre. He is surprisingly self-absorbed. He says his father wants him to see the deputy, whatever, because he says because Lucius wants to break his pact with God. And I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure he just wants you to get an artist out of a restraining order. I don't think it's all about your pact with God.
No, I think it could be that, too, because he knew, like, you could see the look on Lucius' face.
No,
like,
he knew, but, like, I really think he just wanted Andre to get the artist off of the gang injunction.
Yeah, but he also knew what kind of situation that would have put his son in, and I'm glad that Andre, you know, found a way around it, but, yeah, he knew what position.
Wait, you're glad Andre found, so you, in your mind, he did the right thing by, like, blackmailing this woman?
I didn't say it was the right thing, but I'm glad that he found an alternative, you know, because he was, you know, by, you know, sleeping with this woman, you know, he stood his ground that he wasn't going to do that. You know, he almost, you know, he was worried. First of all, his
I feel
pastor.
Bad for the woman. Like he toyed, like he was like coming around last season, like screwing her, and like she never knew that. Like he didn't want to. Like in her mind, he likes her, and then like he comes back and he's just gonna blackmail her for a job with this. Like poor woman, just like working one day, up comes this guy again. He's like, oh yeah, if you don't do everything I say, I'm gonna get you fired. Like what?
But she was taking she's literally taking like a sexual bribe from him, you know, before. So it's like, it's not like, you know.
Oh, poor Andre. He had to have sex with the attractive woman. Like, I'm sure there was a gun to his head.
I'm just saying, like, she's not innocent in this situation, you know? So like, she was taking sexual bribes. So, hey.
I'm not a prude. Like I'm okay with her taking. I wish more women in authority took sexual bribes.
Like sexual bribes.
Yes.
Okay.
Like Dean Munch. Dean Munch would take a sexual bribe at a heartbeat.
Oh gosh, it wouldn't even need to be a bribe with Dean Munch. She just like, hey, I want to have sex.
Yeah.
I'll just fill you up until you give in or something like that. Like, what a creeper.
I'm still fascinated, though, with Andre, though, that TV's number one show, Empire, seems to really, to me, to be implicitly communicating that, like, mental illness and deep spirituality are related. Like, Andre hears voices, and they're the voice of God. Like, one character is, like, all about his religion, and that character is also mentally broken. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it seems to be implicit to me in Empire that Andre is deeply religious because he is mentally unstable. I don't know, I mean.
I don't necessarily think. I think it's just. Maybe just a specific character. Maybe it's, hopefully, you know, they bring on another character, you know, who's also in, you know, show the difference. But I think it's just Andre needs something to hold on to. Or needs something to hold on to more than just his meds.
I agree, and I think that's what the show is communicating, that people who reach out and cling to religion are somehow weak. Like, they aren't strong enough to support themselves like Jamal or Lucius or Cookie. Like Andre is a very, you know, weak person, weak willed. Like he is subject to the whims of those around him, and as well as his own like mental, you know, status is not very strong. I don't know. It might not be what they're trying to communicate, but I can't help but see it. I think it's interesting. I'm not knocking the show for if that is what they're trying to communicate. Like, I think it's really interesting. It's surprising.
Do you think his wife is actually pregnant?
It didn't occur to me that she wouldn't be. Why is it? Because she's white? The white devil? Like, she must be lying.
Well, she was the Lady Macbeth last season, so...
I felt bad for his wife, mostly. I mean, I remember she was, like, in on the plots with him, but then, like, he basically went crazy, and she was, like, the only one left holding the check.
Yeah, I know some people don't like the character, but especially in season one, she was probably, to me, one of the most interesting ones.
Yeah.
Because a lot, you know, the way she was presented at first, you know, people, you know, assumed that she was in it for the money for herself and stuff like that, until you got to know her further down.
Well, as Hakeem said, it's not about the money. It's about the power.
Not the power. But yeah, but the power with her, you know, with coming to Empire, she don't give a shit about Empire, really. You know, she has her own, you know, business and stuff like that. So this was, you know, her pushing Andre was for Andre, you know, because it's something that he wanted. So she's the supportive wife, you know, and especially in season one, you know, who hold down her husband. You know, their marriage was probably the most interesting.
Yeah, they like to play games with people, and that's where I do think like that deputy, whoever she was, is a bit of a victim, because like she was part of their game, and like Andre's found God now, he doesn't play games anymore, so he blackmails her. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not as in love with Empire this season as I was last, but it's still entertaining at times. Do you have anything else on it?
Uh, No, I'm still thinking about that weird ass threesome, but
Well, you just think about that for a few more minutes. Go dream about it, since apparently that's what
Oh
you did.
yeah, I thought I'd been dreaming. I really been dreaming.
So yeah, we'll be back with Empire next week. Up next is The Leftovers. Stay with us. Ash, I really loved The Leftovers this week. The episode was entitled Lens. What did you think?
I love this episode.
Okay, tell me
First of
all
all,
about why.
I forgot how intimidating Regina King could be. That was
Really
scary.
intimidating.
I was like, holy shit, I'm terrified. Like, she's someone like who, like, if she would have, like, we heard was having our argument or something like that, and she said, "I'm gonna kick your ass right now," I believe it. It's like, you know what?
I'll tell you what, when she chased down that kid, he knew it. Like, she didn't even have to say it. He knew she was coming. That teenager. She ran him down, too. I was fucking impressed. I couldn't run down a teenager.
Oh man, yeah, she was hauling ass. I was like, oh shit. But yeah, this was a really great episode. I really did.
Yeah, it was really good for a lot of reasons. I thought one of the things it did really well that might not have been on the surface was it deployed so much exposition without a CBS procedural style like information dump. Think about all we learned in this episode. We learned why the goat's always getting murdered, why the birds are in the ground, why the mile markers in Miracle exist. We learned that Tommy ran away, that the old spiritual man is related to Erica, probably her father, and that he's the dude John tried to murder. We learned all of this without ever feeling like somebody's just sitting down telling us information. Like,
yeah, those were like reveals.
Yeah, that's one thing, like, Damian Lindelof does so well is just get a lot of information into a short time without two characters sitting down, like one character just like explaining everything, like you see sometimes. I am really liking what this episode does, and we'll talk about the scene obviously with Nora and Erica that was sort of a show stealer, but I like on a less ambitious show, the fundamental mystery would be, like, what happened to the soil that caused it to stop preserving the birds. That is, at best, like, an offshoot of an offshoot for The Leftovers. Instead, it ties into, like, the mysteries surrounding Evie and Matt's wife, and the idea that Kevin, or the Garveys in general, are, like, cursed, and the idea that Nora has that she's a lens, and like, could the mysteries of Miracle all be so simple as like Kevin Garvey is bad luck? I hope not. But...
Oh gosh. it's most likely never going to get answered. Like, you know, a lot of things in this show, but it's, you know, it puts in that possibility in your head, like, that these people could simply just be cursed. And so I think it dealt with the possibility of, you know, that moment with the departure, like the people that disappeared, you know, people thought them, you know, wanted to get away. Well, like not wanted to get away, but thought, you know, these people to leave. You know, it was, you know, something that their mind, like, you know, Erica was talking about with Evie, you know, saying how, she didn't want her daughter to know about the, you know, the divorce.
Right.
Or the possible divorce.
Yeah.
And so now she
prayed that,
she
prayed that Evie would be okay with it or something. And then she was gone.
And, you know, with Nora, she probably thought the same thing with her family, you know, with her son, you know, spilling the water on her phone and the chaos that was going on at the table. She probably just, like, she just wanted out at that moment.
I don't usually think of The Leftovers as like a fantasy or sci-fi show, though I guess it is a sci-fi show maybe, or so. I mean, it's really strange because it's a show in a realistic world except for this one anomaly. The anomaly being that all these people disappeared. So one thing good science fiction and fantasy does is it literalizes like abstract things, and I thought this was an example of that with the Nora as the lens. Like Nora's concern that terrible things keep happening because of her isn't unnormal. Like it mirrors a real world concern that people often experience. Like it's very common to think like shitty things keep happening to you because of something you've done, or like your bad, or karma, or putting off a bad aura or something. And Nora's lens storyline is really like a literalization of that. And I also thought like her making a huge donation to the Find Evie Fund, like at the fundraiser, seemed to be like her doubling down or attempting to like reinforce her own conviction that no more departures can occur. Like that girl is out there. There no such thing as secondary departures. Like.
She's hell bent on like no more departures. Like we saw last was it last week when she showed her point of no, it was the week
It's
before.
2 weeks ago, yeah.
With Kevin not being in the room, and she like had that freak out about the he may have been departed, and no, that's probably like her worst nightmare right there at this point.
Yeah. We talked about Erica running down that kid. One thing I didn't mention is that the sound editing in that on that scene was beautiful. Like sound is used as a big part of the storytelling in The Leftovers in a way that a lot of television doesn't use it. And I don't know, I thought that this incorporated the use of mu this episode incorporated the use of music really well. And but like the little touches like this are even better because it enabled us to experience that scene the way in a way Erica did from a different point of view than we would get from just the visual. I don't know. I feel like a lot of times shows just forget about the television series, forget like, yes, it's a visual medium, but we also have this audio component and we can do things with the sound. And I don't know, I thought that was interesting. So there are two really amazing scenes this episode, in my opinion. One occurs when they are at the fundraiser and Erica and they're show and they decide to show like the missing girls interspersed with Rihanna's stay, and then Nora steals some government files and Erica loses like her shit on the entire population of the town. And then the other is, of course, Erica and Nora facing off. Which scene did you like more? Which was a better scene for you?
I'm not sure. I'll probably have to go with, because they both was like amazing scenes. I'm gonna go with Nora and Erica, the Nora and Erica scene.
All right, tell me why.
Just the way that the interaction, and it showed we got more into these characters. These two, it's just two characters, and how we got into their heads, and it showed not only the similarities, but it showed like the big difference between these two characters, and Nora losing her family, and you see Erica lost her daughter, and it's the way it was done, and the way Erica flipped the script on Nora, the way she did, like Nora was so helping, it was like, I'm gonna prove that your daughter wasn't departed, and it wasn't just for Erica's benefit; it was probably more for her own benefit
Yeah,
as well.
absolutely. And Nora's worldview is so fragile because when Erica did that, like she couldn't even answer one question without breaking down. Yeah.
It was just so beautifully done, and it's the fact, just them sitting just across from each other, and it's supposed to be this simple thing, and it was just really good.
It was the extreme close-ups and like tight shots over Gina King and Carrie Coon. I thought it did a great job like combining their intensity and like the range of emotion and development of emotion those actresses conveyed, and it made that scene even better. Like it that was as impacting and memorable as any scene this series has produced. And like a lot of it, and I give credit to a lot of people in the show, but those are the two best actors or actresses on the show, and like putting those two in a room and letting them act off of each other and just stripping everything else away, like I mean, I'm not sure that I'm not sure there was anybody on the series last year that Carrie Coon could have had that kind of scene with. Like, this is why you bring in Regina King, and this is why you keep Carrie Coon as like a focus character, because you can have this. It was great. How did
That's
Nora
killer.
know, or how did Erica know that Nora is the one who threw the rock? I didn't quite get that. Like, she just
I don't
realized, like,
know.
it just dawned on her? Like, I don't.
It probably did.
Or was she just like, or did she not know? She's just like, I'm gonna throw a rock through
I
that
thought about that too. It's like, funny, like someone threw a rock in my window, but like, well, I'm pissed at her right now. Someone threw a rock in her fucking window. Not realizing that she's the one that threw the shit in your window in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like she knew, but I don't know how she would know. I mean, I don't know. I also, okay, I'm gonna say that was the better scene. The one I enjoyed, or I should say my favorite scene, though, was, John passively watching, of course, because that's what John does, as Nora, like, steals government files to Rihanna's stay, with the slide of, like, missing girls, in the background. I thought it was, at the same time, it was sad, and it was captivating, and it was illuminating. It's telling us things about the character all at once. And I think that's really what The Leftovers is. I think it's sad, and it's illuminating, and it's captivating. And I don't know that it was as good as the other scene, but I think it probably was more representative of the series than the other scene. Because that's the first scene we've ever got on The Leftovers quite like that, that had the intensity almost of a really, really well done Breaking Bad or Mad Men scene, where it's just two characters acting off of each other, and we just understand that, like, the weight of their lives are bent on this conversation. One thing we haven't talked about, we sort of brushed on why John plays Batman before. He practices vigilantism because he's super uncomfortable with the idea that Jordan is somehow supernatural, so he, like, physically imposes that belief on others. He also probably believes he's keeping the town safe, but is he, like, ethically speaking, as a person presumably with ethics, how do you feel about what John is doing, like going around beating people up and lighting fires?
Honestly, like it could be something that Erica, when she said, she's like, you just need something to hit.
Right, but he is channeling that to hit people he think is doing the wrong thing. He's not just hitting randoms.
Well, I don't know, because I want to know more about like why he, tried to kill, Erica's father. But I don't know. Well, actually, with her saying that, it made me think like maybe he wasn't was abusive before,
Yeah,
or
or like molested her or something. Like, that's kind
yeah, but
of,
like
I mean, for your husband to go try to kill your father, like, some serious shit has to happen. And I think it's her father. I mean, it could be her grandfather. That's a really old dude. I don't know exactly. He could be her uncle. I don't know exactly what he is, but he's of some close relation to her.
But I don't know with John, like I don't know if he actually thinks he's trying. I think he's trying to prove something, or he just don't want to. I think he's afraid of the possibility that that place is magic. Oh, well, not magic, but there's something special about that place. So he's trying to, do in his own way. Trying, and he thinks he's doing the right thing. At least that's what he's trying to tell himself. But I think in reality, he just doesn't want to find out. That place, that it's something about that place, the fact that it could be special. He doesn't like the idea of it.
Well, I mean, I think that he thinks of himself as Dexter, right? Dexter, all right, Dexter was knew that he had to kill people, but so he focused himself to kill the bad people, to kill the killers. I think John really thinks he's doing good work. I just don't know that he yeah, I mean, I think that it's in the right idea, but I just think that the way he produces the results he's getting leads to, like, is basically a fascist regime. Like, there's no law, or there's no sense of getting to defend yourself against whatever you're being accused of. Like when John Murphy decides you've done something wrong, you're fucked.
My thing is, like, what is with the people that are following with him? Like that's doing this with him. It's like, what the fuck?
The other firemen, like, and he's only been out of jail for a few years. He just, like, convinced all the other firemen to go, like, beat the shit out of people.
Like,
with it.
No. Oh, good. Mob mentality, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. I really liked Lynn's. I'd put it right up there with any episode we've seen from this season of The Leftovers, or obviously any episode of The Leftovers. You have anything else on it?
No, but okay. I do have to throw out this theory because
okay.
My brother-in-law doesn't watch the show, but he knows the concept of it, and he had this idea. He came with this idea about. Why people got departed. So he said that he believes it's possibly aliens, okay? Possibly aliens, and like the people that got departed were people that are had a certain wavelength in their brains or something.
He sounds
and
like he should be one of the scientists that we're calling Nora.
Yes. When I watched this episode, I thought the same. I was like, oh my God, that is my brother-in-law. Like, it's so close to what he was. But he was thinking, like, these people, like, had a certain wavelength in their brain or something. So that's how they got chosen to be departed and stuff like that.
I don't know what that's based on. That's interesting. But
I don't know
if there's anything on the show that supports that.
I don't know either. He doesn't watch the show, but he knows the concept of it. I guess it was just an idea he popped in his head. So he wanted me to bring it up on the podcast.
Okay,
so.
Well, we have... I would say I think there's a lot of theories about why, but I think that's, like, the point... I think, like, the point is that there are no answers sometimes. Like,
yeah.
And that's the most frustrating thing. That's why Kevin Garvey punches walls, because he doesn't know why. It makes him so mad.
Well, we also got his confession.
Oh, yeah, we sort of skipped over that. Nora and Kevin are, like, the ultimate story of how you can't really outrun your past. Like, Nora is haunted by the thoughts that she was haunted by in Mapleton, even after she's moved. And Kevin has an actual fucking ghost haunting him.
Really be haunted.
Yes. Oh, man. And she just apparently, like, before she was just showing up sporadically. Now she's apparently, like, there all the time.
Yeah, just hanging out with her. Well, I found it interesting that she told him that, him telling Nora that, you know, that was a bad thing. When I really was not, I think it was two episodes before or something, a few episodes ago. She asked him, like, why won't you tell your family that I'm here?
Yeah, but then she told him he messed up. Then again,
like,
maybe she doesn't exist, and maybe Kevin's just fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That explains why she's inconsistent.
That's his brain.
Yeah. Oh, where is his mind? Where is it? Okay, so we will be back next week with The Leftovers. I believe we only have 3 or 4 episodes left. So I think we'll be getting hopefully some stuff that reaches this quality again. Up next, we have Fargo. Stay with us. So Fargo is back this week in an episode called The Gift of the Magi. How do you feel about, first of all, let's just start with, how do you feel about the low-key, or formerly low-key and now, like, active discussion about existentialism in Fargo? Is this essentially an existentialist story? Is life meaningless in Fargo? Is it all a big joke?
I won't say it's that. Might be a bit of naive, Well, clearly, you know, like it was this small place, you know, and it's pretty much being fucked over by, you know, this violence that's happening, and you know, these, I won't say innocent, but these naive people are getting hit in the crossfire over, you know, just the craziness that's happening elsewhere.
Yeah. I don't I well, I mean, look, I think the girl in the butcher shop openly discussing Albert Camus, and like there was a episode named after him or named after one of his works a couple episodes back, The Myth of Sisyphus. I don't know. I think that was about like the search for meaning in a meaningless world. I don't know. I think that it is really informing the story, because what is the point of what any of the characters are doing? Like, what are they do? What is the point? Like, you know, so this episode was called The Gift of the Magi. Let's just get this out of the way. Do you know The Gift of the Magi?
No.
Okay. The Gift
I
of
mean,
the,
I heard of it, but...
Yeah, it was a really famous, like, old short story. And,
yeah.
Okay, so this boy... And this boy and this girl were lovers, and, like, they didn't have any money, and they wanted to get each other a Christmas gift. And all he had was his watch. So he wanted to get her something, and she had, like, I forget exactly, she had, like, this necklace that was really valuable to her. So he got her, like, a pendant to go on the necklace, and but in order to get it, he had to sell his watch. And... All she had was the necklace. So she sold it to get him like a chain for his watch.
Oh yeah.
So they both ended up giving it to each other, but ultimately it was pointless and they lost everything they had. And that obviously informed what happened with Kirsten Dunst and her sacrifice. She gave up everything for nothing. And that's what, like, Lou, like all these characters, the Gerhardts, giving up their lives left and right for what? What are the Kansas City crew dying all over the place for what? Like, people are being murdered senselessly for something that is of. They're basically fighting over like little parking lots in fucking nowhere, Minnesota, North Dakota. I mean, and meanwhile, the butcher and his wife are screwing up their lives royally. Lou is putting he and his family in jeopardy. I mean, it's just, it does seem like a cruel joke on all these characters. The thing I noticed most of all when I watched an episode of Fargo, though, on a positive note, is how every piece of the medium is used and how full each episode is. The camera is used to tell the story. The plot is full. It's full of character building and tension and suspense, and the characters show great range and they develop. The music is carefully chosen. The episodes are titled in ways like we just talked about to create extra room for the framing, where it's like, this is a true story and we change the, every little thing you can do to a television episode to pack it more full of meaning. Noah Hawley does that with Fargo. We have so much in each episode.
You gotta pay attention, and things come back, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat. It keeps you engrossed into the story, like every story that's happening.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think a great example of that is how we can feel the baby, like the little Gerhardt. All of a sudden, we can feel his heart beating as he tries to become a killer. And it stands in stark contrast, because all these other characters, like Mike Milligan, are just, like, cool as fuck when they're, like, staring down the barrel of a gun. And, like, he is a nervous wreck about trying to heal somebody. He just can't do it. And he was sort of innocent, and that's why he's dead.
Good well, is he dead? I thought he got shot.
He got shot, and he was left in the burning building.
No, they took him out.
They took him out? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was still... Yeah, he got shot. And she said... the girl, she was saying, like, he's still alive. So they dragged him out.
Okay.
So I think he's still alive.
I did not remember. I knew he got shot and went down and the building burned down. So I just assumed he was dead along with the other one.
Yeah, I think they got him out.
I really love the shootout scene between Kansas City and the Gerhardts, like interspersed with the Ronald Reagan speech. It was filmed and executed. Okay, it was so cinematic, like more than a lot of war films with their like shootouts. And it was also really interestingly suggesting that like Ronald Reagan and the conservative movement is responsible partially for like the era of violence as well as the death of mom and pop businesses. And it's really interesting to see how like openly Ronald Reagan is being mocked in this episode. Like which like 2 days before like another Republican debate where they all deify the man. It's really interesting to me. Like I want are there Republicans that watch are there conservatives that watch Fargo? They have to be outraged. They are outraged.
That scene was done so well, and what it caught me off guard. But it was done so well, and the way it was done, like the guy who we suspect, was, in charge of Kansas City is now dead. And so there's clearly got to be somebody, above him, either that or, Mike Milligan.
Yeah, and I'm gonna miss him, but I'm glad it was him and not Mike Milligan. I would have been like seriously sad today if we were talking about the death of Mike Milligan.
Mike Milligan. Yeah. And his scene, was definitely so good.
The scene between him and Dodd's daughter was really interesting, and not just because Brad Garrett's head was in it. It showed him being like actively menacing in a way that up until now was under the surface. Like you could tell that he was sort of, had some evil about him, and that was in his air, and that was part of what was so good about this performance was that he conveyed it without ever doing anything bad. But here in this scene, he was pretty much like flat out like, "You forgot who I am. Like I am a fucking psychopath, and I will just as soon let you die with the rest of them."
Oh my gosh, I felt so bad for her, but at the same time, I was like, you're a fucking idiot, sweetheart. Like, you try to be bad, but it's coming to bite you in the ass. And it, yeah.
There's one of my favorite like folk stories was like this woman found a snake on the side of the road and she was lonely, so she took it home and she pet it and she fed it and she slept with it and she loved this snake. And one day the snake reached up and bit her. And as she was dying, she said, "Why did you do this?" And he was like, "I'm a snake." Did you forget? And like that's sort of what the scene reminded me of. She's like, "But why? Like, who I fucking am? What do you mean, why?"
It's like, what do you like? Do you see us as this Romeo and Juliet tale? It was like, oh gosh, like, I hope she does it. It's like, girl, like, you couldn't, of all the
Of
people,
all the
like,
gin
it's
joints in all
awful.
the world.
Yeah, I'm like, come on.
You know what was really cool scene they did was when Jesse Plemons was sleeping, and there was just like these faint flashing images of dying rye over Jesse Plemons' sleeping body. I've never seen that film technique used before to like show memories haunting somebody, and especially with like trauma. And I thought that was really interesting. I've never seen like that film technique used for that reason before. I don't know. I thought that was really cool.
This whole episode was done really well, and I loved it. I really did.
I also want to say like I didn't. One of the things I love about Fargo is like the stakes are really high. Like okay, well we talk about Buffy in a minute, and like which we have a Buffy podcast, guys, check it out. One of the things that happens like every episode though is like, oh, so and so gets kidnapped or so and so is hostage. Are they going to die? And like, of course they aren't really going to die. So the question is like, how do they survive? It's not ha do
Yeah,
so, but
but
like
how are they
in
going to get out of it?
yeah, but in like when Jesse Plemons is being assaulted or being like, when those guys are trying to kill him in the butcher shop. I mean, for all I know, he's going to die. I don't know if he's going to survive or not. Like, it's on the stakes are that high that at any time any character can die. We have established
Die.
that now. The only character who will not die is Lou. Lou will survive somehow, but that is
Yeah,
it.
we know that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was great. Do you have anything else?
No.
All right, so we're gonna do a new little segment before we get on our soapboxes, where we just do like the week's winners, and I'm gonna let Ash go first, ladies first. We're gonna do the best episode, the best scene, and the best actor of the week in our opinions. And Ash, you go first, and whatever you pick, I'll try to pick something different so we don't match.
Something
All right, Beth. So, why don't you start with Bet? We'll start with the smallest, I guess. Best actor. Who is the best actor of the week?
after the week, I'm gonna give it to Regina King. I
Okay.
had to give it to her this week. It was like every scene that she was in, you know, especially up to this point, like it's been gr she like she's been great, but this episode, like it was like her. Like,
Yeah.
it showcased the hell out of her, and it was brilliant, and she nailed everything. It was awesome.
You're right. I mean, there's not much to dispute with any of that. To be different, I'll go with her counterpart and say Carrie Coon. Carrie Coon portraying Nora and portraying like how damaged and just structurally fucked up that character is beautiful, and she has such a grasp on that character, and she played so well with Regina King in that scene. And even when she comes home and talks to Kevin, I thought like just how exhausted and broken she looked as she got like she wanted an answer. What's going on with you, Kevin? So he gives her an answer, and she's like, "Well, that didn't help."
Yeah, like you just made my day worse.
Yeah, I didn't think it could get worse, but it just did.
It just did.
Yeah, her and Matt. So okay, favorite best scene of the week.
I have this probably is gonna be a leftover. Gotta go with Erica and Nora. I gotta go with that scene. That scene was just so well done. It was just so good. Like, that scene had me glued to my seat and my eyes glued to the fucking TV. It was just so fucking good.
Okay, to be different, I'll veer toward the scene we just talked about from Fargo, the shootout that was like interspersed with the Ronald Reagan speech, just because I believe that the Nora Erica scene was more dramatically affecting and is probably better in that sense. But as a cinematic thing, like
Yeah.
the way it was
Of
shot
like
and the way it was filmed, that was I thought the most interesting and well filmed scene of the week.
Yeah, that was my second choice.
So are you just gonna make it a leftover sweep? Like, what was the
Yeah.
show of the week?
I gotta go with leftovers this week. I really do. Like everything about this episode this week, it was just like, you know, Erica's lash out, the goat thing, you know,
Fucking goat.
the
Why are they killing the goat? Like, why, John? Why, if there are no miracles, why are you letting him kill this fucking goat?
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't been taken out yet. Like, you're just killing goats. Like, what the fuck is that about? But,
Got some issues, man.
I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, the whole episode was just so good. What I love about the show, it really is, you know, a character study show. You know,
It
so
is.
yeah, this episode was really good.
And I was talking to a friend of mine this week, and we were arguing, sort of. I mean, because essentially what she was saying was that what is that this television show she was talking about is a character-driven story. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it's very rare that a television series is character-driven because it has so much content to fill that most episodes become plot-driven and story-driven, and that's fine.
Sure.
But that most series do that. It's rare that a series is mostly character driven, and I think you're right, The Leftovers is. And I Fargo has been a better full season for me, but for the week,
Yeah.
I can't deny The Leftovers. Like, that was, you know, as good and compelling as it gets, especially how it built toward the end. Like, all it just kept getting better and better and better. Oh, yeah. You want to talk about The Walking Dead for a minute?
Yes.
I knew it. How did I guess?
although something that I want to talk about this episode, but Rick and Jesse, them kissing. I don't want that to happen. It's
Was the
stupid.
goat back?
No, the goat got killed last
Damn
episode.
it. Everybody dies on that show. Even the goat.
Even the ghost. Yes. But yeah, it's like Rick and Jesse, I don't care about this. It's such a stupid storyline. It's not, I don't even consider this a romance. Like, he just shot her husband in the face. Like, technically a few days ago. You know? I mean, granted, he was,
That's romantic, Ash. You don't get it. That's
no,
romantic.
there's no, I mean, granted, you know, her husband was an abusive, you know, asshole. But, like, why you, like, woman, you go focus on your kids, and Rick, you go focus on your damn kids. Like, there's way more shit going on right now than you sucking face, because this shit doesn't make any sense anyways. There was another kiss, Tara and new character Denise. I thought that was cute. Actually, that shit made more sense than Rick and Jesse, and then that shit kind of came out of nowhere. But, this episode wasn't that great in the sense that they was focusing on characters that no one really cares about. Now, these new characters, you know, the Alexandrians, and they should have put more focus on, like, this character Carol, you know, after she just wanted to, you know, just shot up a bunch of people and stuff like that was trying to invade. Maggie got focus, but it didn't feel like enough focus to me. Like, when Michonne had to tell her that, trying to explain to Maggie why, you know, her husband's not, you know, her husband didn't come back with her. You know, the way that was shot, you know, that should have been like a close-up. Like, it was kind of like off to the side, you know, from someone else's point of view. It was like, no, that's a very serious fucking moment right there, you know, like, but yeah, I mean, I'm coming back next week, so I'm still gonna watch it. Just still
You're
waiting for.
so addicted to this show. Like, this show is so, like, emotionally manipulative with people because, like, there are so many people I've talked to before that have been like, I fucking hate The Walking Dead. Yeah, I still watch it. Yeah, I still
Yeah, I'm still
watch
gonna watch it. But the thing
it.
about The Walking Dead that a lot of people, especially a lot of people who don't watch it, don't realize that this technically this show, you're probably not gonna agree, but you don't watch the show, so whatever, I don't care.
I don't watch this shit.
It is a cat. This show, a lot of people, you know, who don't watch it just assume that it's a show about zombies. No, the show is pretty much a character study as show as well. It's pretty much who you become in this type of environment. You see the progression of these people, you know, like The Walking Dead. The title is not about the zombies. The title of the show is about the characters themselves. They become the Walking Dead. So that's, you know, it's that's what makes the show so good, because I don't give a shit about the zombies. So, like, you know, I was never into like zombie movies, but no, the focus is about the characters and who they become and what happens. But the zombies is just the environment that they're in.
Okay. I just gotta, I don't have enough knowledge to agree with you or disagree, so I'll just
Go
let
buy the comics.
you. Yeah. Okay, so I wanna go over a couple of things. I just wanna give a shout out to like a few shows we don't talk about that are currently being really, really fucking good. I talk about You're the Worst a lot. It's on FXX, it's a 30-minute show. It really plays with the format this season as far as what a comedy is and what a comedy can do. How fucking dark and dramatic it can be and still be a comedy. It's great. Manhattan, which comes on WGN, has been similarly great. It's another show not very many people watch, and it just doesn't have the right marketing, and it's not been on the right network. Like, most people don't even know WGN does dramas. But it's been really good ever since it was like invented, ever since it was created. It's a show about physicists in New Mexico during World War II trying to invent the nuclear bomb. And it's a show about how their lives are impacting each other and just like the pressure that they are feeling under the weight of invent this for two things. First of all, like, you must come up with this once in a lifetime creation or we're all gonna die. And also, like under the weight of the government is breathing down your neck and constantly worried about like spies and traitors, and everything you do is being carefully watched by like secret government officials, and it's incredibly fucking stressful.
What's it called again?
It's called Manhattan, like the Manhattan Project, and also The Nick has been really good. Steven Soderbergh, good at making movies, television. Clive Owen, good at acting. It's good. Watch it. Also, just for Ash, everybody check out the Patriots beating the shit out of the Giants and getting rid of some demons Sunday. That should be
What?
interesting.
Shut
Huh?
up. Shut up, okay?
You want to make a
No,
bet
no.
on the game, Ash? Do you want to bet on the game?
No, I'm not betting on the game, but all I'm saying is I got faith in my Giants, okay? I got faith in
Faith
my
of what? They gave how many touchdowns did Drew Brees throw a couple weeks ago? Like 20?
Whatever. Whatever. Like,
Okay.
go away.
Okay. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Check out our other podcast. It's all about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it's called Your Childhood Trauma. It's on our same page. You probably see it. Please give us a like. Please give us a comment. Let us know what you think. We're also on iTunes as well as Podomatic. So hope you come back and thanks for listening. I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And we're out.